Well, it was about 200 years ago that there was a story. It's a legend that happened in Northern Virginia. There was an old man who stood on the edge of a riverbank, and that was the way people used to do it in those days to get across the river. They would wait on the edge of a riverbank and wait until somebody on a horse would come through and ask them for a ride to get to the other side. It was very cold that day, and after a lengthy wait, he noticed some horsemen approaching. So he was very looking forward to getting across the river to his home. But as each horseman went by, he just let them go by without saying a word. One and then two and three horsemen. He'd look at them, but he wouldn't say anything. Finally, the last rider that came up to pass the river, he asked the man, he said, would you mind giving me a ride to cross the river? And so the horseman said, well, sure. And the horseman reached down and helped him up to his horse. And once across the river, the horseman asked him, well, where do you live? And the man told him, little ways down the river in a small cottage. So the rider took him to the small cottage. And once across the river, the rider asked him, he said, you know, I know that you saw, you know, about three other horsemen go by. Why did you not ask any of them? Why did you ask me to help you? And this is what the old man said. He said, I looked into their eyes. And when I looked into their eyes, I could see that they really had no concern for me. Just this old guy by the river. I saw no concern. And I thought it would be useless to ask them for a ride. But when I saw you and I caught your eyes, I could see that you had some compassion and that you would be willing to help. And so I just knew that when I asked you that you would help me cross the river. Of course, the rider was quite humbled by this. He was very grateful for what the old man told him. And with that, the rider rode off to his destination, which according to the legend was the White House, and the rider was President Thomas Jefferson. Now, I don't know if that is a true story. It is a legend of what may have happened at that time. But nevertheless, I believe there is a lesson that we can glean from that particular legend. And that begs a question we need to ask ourselves. And that is, what do people see in us? What do people see in us? Is it sincerity and truth? As we know, 1 Corinthians 5 tells us that we're to have the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. Do people see that within us? Or is it something else? You know, in a scathing condemnation, Jesus Christ condemned the Pharisees for how they were living and how they were coming across to others. Let's notice this over here in Matthew 23, beginning in verse 25. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and the dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. So they were trying to look good, but inwardly they had this extortion going on in their thinking, and this what you would call self-indulgence, all about the self. And then you go to verse 27, a similar condemnation. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which are indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead man's bones and are all of uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteousness to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy. Full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. So he called them hypocrites. And that inside of them, he said, you're full of hypocrisy. What do people see in us? Is it sincerity and truth, or is it hypocrisy? So during the days of unleavened bread, it would probably be good to ask that question about each of us. We need to each of us ask ourselves that question. What do people see in us? Do they see sincerity, or do they see hypocrisy? First of all, what does hypocrisy mean anyway? Now, in the Greek, when they use this term hypocrisy, it meant that referred to, and this is according to Help's Bible study, someone acting under a mask, someone acting like an actor on a stage with a mask. Now, Thayer, his dictionary, says this word in the Greek refers to play acting, or Strong's even says that, stage player or play acting. Now, it was a custom in Greek and Roman times for actors to wear these big, huge masks when they would get on stage. And then there, inside of these masks, there would be some type of mechanical type of device in which they were to augment their voice. It would not just be their natural voice, but it would be like some type of amplification of their voice. And so, hence the word became used as a hypocrite, one who was speaking out under this mask with a mechanically enhanced type of audio system to speak the words, the script in the play. So that was the definition understood back at that time. When you look at the English definition of the word, and I believe this particular definition of the word in English really says it best. And you can find this in many of the English dictionaries, and that is pretending to be what one is not. Pretending to be what one is not. Now let's go back earlier in Matthew and see what Jesus Christ taught his disciples. So let's go back to Matthew 16. Matthew 16, and let's look at verse 5. Interesting story here. When the disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. And Jesus said to them, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees." So he begins to talk about the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees, who were very constantly critical of Christ and always tried to get Christ trapped up in his words. And this is the first thing he says, the leaven, calls it leaven. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "Is it because we've taken no bread?" Because they didn't understand what he was talking about. Well, what do you mean leaven of the Pharisees? Well, I guess he's telling us that because we don't have any bread. Now, Jesus reminded them of the miracles, he had shown them. And they were all part of it. They saw it. And he said in verse 8, "Oh, you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread?" do you not remember or understand the five loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up, nor the seven loaves of this 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it that you did not understand that I didn't speak to you concerning bread? I wasn't talking about physical bread here, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the word for leaven there is yeast. Yeast. I'm talking about the yeast of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So Jesus was explaining to them that it was leaven. Now, what's very interesting at this point is what the disciples then understood. They gleaned what Jesus Christ was saying and came to this phenomenal conclusion in verse 12. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So they, in their mind, were able to understand that the leaven that Jesus Christ was referring to was their doctrine. Now, the word for doctrine here means their basis of teaching, their instruction that they were doing. So this was something that they recognized that it was the teachings of the Pharisees that they were not to be participating in, that the teaching of the Pharisees was to be considered leavened, and that was to be avoided. So what was the leaven of the Pharisees? What was that doctrine that they were to beware of? What was the doctrine that they were to beware of? Well, we find it clearly stated in Luke 12 and verse 1. Luke 12 and in verse 1. In the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, yeast, which the disciples would have already known it was the doctrine. And then Jesus specifically said what that doctrine was. He specifically said what that leaven was of the Pharisees. Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy. Pretending to be what one is not. It's like they were acting under a mask. And they were saying things that were not really what was supposed to have been said by them, and that the disciples were not to be like the Pharisees. Notice verse 2. There is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark, remember, whatever we speak will be heard in the light. That whatever you've spoken in the ear, in the inner rooms, will be proclaimed on the housetops. Remember, an actor would enhance his words. And here we're seeing that all words, no matter where they're spoken or how they're spoken or when they're spoken, are all heard by God. You know, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So that's what's in the heart, what comes out. We can't hide anything from God. So just as we have removed the physical leaven from our homes, and we are now in the third day of unleavened bread, we have to remove this type of leavening as well. The doctrine of hypocrisy. The doctrine of the teaching of hypocrisies. So what were the Pharisees really doing? What were they teaching? How were they coming across? You see an example of this in verse 54. Verse 54. He said to the multitudes, whenever you see a cloud rising out of the west, immediately you say a shower is coming, and so it is. It's kind of a script in a play. When you see a cloud in the west, obviously a shower is coming. It's obvious. And when you see the south wind blow, you say there will be hot weather. So they had their weather prognosticators back then, their weather forecasters, and it was like a common knowledge. It was commonly said. It was like a script that they went by. Hypocrites. That's what he calls them. You can discern the face of the sky and the earth, but how is it you do not discern this time? Yes, and why even of yourselves do you not judge what is right? So here he says that you know whether it's going to be rainy or hot. You have that script. It's part of your thinking. Why though did you not understand the time in which you're really living, when the Son of God was right with you, when Jesus Christ, as the future King of the kingdom, was right there? And they didn't understand it. They didn't see it. They were not judging rightly. That was one of their problems. They were not judging rightly. Look at Luke 13, verse 10. Luke 13, verse 10, and we see another example how they were coming across. Now, I was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had a spirit of infirmity for 18 years. That's a long time to be sick with an infirmity, and was bent over and could no way raise herself up. You know, some type of horrific arthritis, if that's what it was, where you can't even raise up. You were just bent over. You for 18 years that was going on. And when Jesus saw her, he called her to him and said, "Woman, you are loosed from your infirmity." He had compassion on her. He saw her and he called her over to him. "You be loosed." And he laid hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God. Everyone should have been excited about it. Not everyone. Notice verse 14. The ruler of the synagogue answered with indignation. He was very upset because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. Not that the healing was wrong, but he did it on the Sabbath. And in a script type of rebuke, he told Christ, "There are 6 days on which men are ought to work. Therefore, come and be healed on them and not on the Sabbath day." So it was a rebuke against Christ and even to this woman who had this infirmity for 18 years. "Hey, you did it the wrong day. You shouldn't have come and bothered him. You shouldn't have been around here. But what are you doing on this day?" And so it was a condemnation, both of the poor lady and of Christ, of what he had done. So what did Jesus Christ say in verse 15? He responds. He shows him his hypocrisy. He said, the Lord answered and said, "Hypocrite." First thing, that's what he calls him, a hypocrite. He said, "Does not each of you on the Sabbath loose his ox and or donkey from the stall and lead it away to water it?" In other words, he's telling him what he already knew, what that leader of the synagogue already knew, that you could lead your animal and get water. So Jesus is saying that is the principle. Remember that principle? You're not thinking. You're not thinking. It's just you're spouting off this as if you're just in a script in a play. You're not thinking. of what is really going on here. And Zoe goes on to say, so ought not this woman, being a daughter of Abraham, which they all believe they were sons and daughters of Abraham, whom Satan has bound, and he calls it out what it was, that Satan had bound her for 18 years. He says, think of it. Think of what that lady has gone through for 18 years. Shouldn't she be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath? And that's how I ended the dialogue. He left it with a question, showing that absolutely it was appropriate to heal on the Sabbath. Now let's look at two more incidences that have occurred. There are so many throughout the Gospels, but let's look at two more here. Mark 7. Mark 7, verse 5. Mark 7, verse 5. The Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? So this was a tradition, and that there were a certain amount of regulations that you had to wash your hands real good all the way up to, I think it was up to your elbows at that particular time before you could eat. Why don't you do that? And so again, Jesus responded by saying in verse 6, Mark 7, verse 6, well, did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites? Again, using that word, as it is written, this people honors me with their lips. They speak, but their heart is not with me. It's far from me. They're not speaking of what's in them. They don't even have God in them. Their hearts are far from him. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold to the tradition of men, the washing of pitchers and cups, and many other such things as you do. And they were not taking care of what was going on within them. And so they were teaching as doctrines commandments of men, their own commandments, their own do's and their own don'ts. You know, in today's world, a script that people say is, we trust in God. And that's on our currency, in God we trust. But is that an accurate statement? Do people really trust in God? No, people don't even believe in God. They don't even want to hear what God has to say. And, you know, Jesus, as we heard earlier in the sermon by Mr. Kylo today, about Jesus came preaching repentance, people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that today. So even though we have lofty terms of in God we trust, it's not being followed through. And of course, we have to be careful that what we say, we follow through. We practice what we preach. We practice what we say. Let's look at Mark 12. Mark 12. Mark 12, verse 14. And this was alluded to earlier today from the sermon. Mark 12, verse 14. When they had come, they said to him, teacher, we know that you are true. We know that you are true. Now, would we say that is an accurate? Now, some did. Some really recognized that he was the Son of God, that he was the Messiah. So, yes, we know, some of them, we know that you are true. We know that you care about no one. You're not, you know, concerned about what somebody says about you. We know that. You do not regard the person of men. You teach the way of God in truth. Interesting acknowledgement here. You teach the way of God in truth. And he could have turned that against them in so many ways, but it's interesting how he did respond to this question. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? So he knew where they were coming from. He knew it was a gotcha question. I'm going to get you. We're going to trip you up in your words. we're just making this question, we're putting this question out there just to trip you up. We're going to catch you. That was their intent. Even though they said, oh, we know that you have faith. We know that you have truth. We know that you are of God. Should we pay taxes to Caesar or not? Now, again, standing back and hearing the answer, who of us could have ever dreamed of this answer? And so Christ said, knowing their hypocrisy, knowing their hypocrisy, verse 15, he said, why do you test me? Why are you doing this? Bring me a denarii that I may see it, but bring me a coin. Let's see what's on this coin. So they brought it to him and said, he said, whose image is this? Whose image of this inscription is this? And they said, Caesar. And Jesus said to them, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And they marveled at him. What an answer. They marveled at him. He cut right through that gotcha question, answered their question, and then also made them realize that they needed to pay taxes and the things of God. They were to do both, the taxes, the tithes, and the offerings. It's very interesting how he responded to him or to them. Now, the danger of hypocrisy is also noted in the Old Testament and the need to avoid it. Actually, the Hebrew word for hypocrite, the Hebrew word for hypocrite means a profane person, someone who is profane, or to soil in a moral sense, to corrupt, to defile, to greatly pollute, or to profane. It meant ungodly. So it had even more of a greater definition in the Hebrew than even in the Greek. So let's look at two places where this word is noted. It's found throughout the Old Testament. In fact, in the book of Job, there are so many instances that are referred to. But let's look at one in Job. Let's look at Job 20, Job 20, and in verse 4. Job 20, and in verse 4. Do you not know this of old? Since man was placed on earth, this was a common understood philosophy at that time. Do you not know this truth? That the triumphing of the wicked is short. It doesn't last. The flood took away all the wicked people. And the joy of the hypocrite is but for a moment. Only for a short time. Only for a short time. It doesn't last. The joy of a hypocrite. Because a hypocrite thinks he's getting something across to others when he really doesn't believe deep down in how he's trying to condemn others. I mean, it's something he's not what he's pretending to be somebody he is not. Through his haughtiness mounts up to the heavens. Though his haughtiness mounts up to the heavens and his head reaches to the clouds, yet he will perish forever. He will perish forever. So even though the hypocrite is haughty, and it's only for a season, he will not last. And that is something that was understood. Do you not know this of old? Since man was placed on earth, this is what happens to those who are hypocrites. Most in the nation of Israel were hypocritical. We see this over here in verse chapter 9 of Isaiah. So let's look at Isaiah. Isaiah 9 and in verse 13. Isaiah 9, verse 13. Isaiah 9, verse 13. For the people do not turn to him who strikes them, nor do they seek the Lord of hosts. Therefore the Lord will cut off the tail, head and the tail from Israel. Palm branch and bulrush, in one day. Verse 16, for the leaders of this people cause them to err. Those who are led by them are destroyed. Therefore, the Lord will have no joy in their young men, nor have mercy on their fatherless and widows, for everyone is a hypocrite and an evildoer, and every mouth speaks folly. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. So God is going to bring some punishment upon Israel for their actions. They don't keep God in their hearts. They come across as some people that are really good, but deep down, there's something missing, and they're not following God as God should be followed. So here's a question. Can hypocrisy, pretending to be what we're not, kind of like as a play actor, can that affect us within the church? Can that affect us as members? Let's look at this example over here in Galatians 2. Galatians 2. Galatians 2, and beginning in verse 11. Now, when Peter had come to Antioch, I, referring to Paul, withstood him to his face, because he was to be blamed, referring to Peter. For before certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles, but when they came, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing those who were of the circumcision. So here, Peter is enjoying a meal with everybody and the Gentiles. They're in Antioch. But because some were coming from Jerusalem, from James, who were Jewish, he thought, I better not be doing this. And I don't know why he was thinking that, because he was doing it just fine with them before that time. And so one other point to consider here is they're all members in the church. These are all members. There are members, they were members in Antioch, the Jewish and Gentile Christians, and you have Jewish members coming from Jerusalem. So they're all members, all in the church. And the rest of the Jews who were with Peter, they played the hypocrite with him. So even Barnabas, and Barnabas is considered the son of encouragement, one who is always out concerned for others and always giving concern for others. Even he was caught up in this and was carried away with their hypocrisy. When I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, if you, being a Jew, live in the manner of Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel Gentiles to live as Jews? And he goes on a little bit further to show this condemnation to Peter. And this is an apostle, Paul, to the apostle Peter, with church members. So can hypocrisy come in and creep in and affect us in the church? Well, it did back then. And we got to be careful it does not with us. See, there's nothing wrong with what Peter was doing beforehand, so there was no need for him to back away. And so you see that example that took place, but there's some other warning that we need to be concerned about as well, and this is in 1 Timothy 4. 1 Timothy 4. 1 Timothy 4. And in verse 1. 1 Timothy 4, verse 1. Now the Spirit expressly says that in the latter times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. This is referring to the end times. I believe we would all say that, yeah, we are in the end times. We see some very horrific sorrows about us. The end is not yet. There are so many other things yet to take place, but things could happen very quickly. But still, we're talking about the times of the end. Could we get caught up in some things of, as it says, lies in hypocrisy, where our consciences become seared like a hot iron? It's a concern. It's out there as a warning. So during these days of unleavened bread, we've put out the unleavened bread, physical unleavened bread, and we're told that we are to avoid the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. So how do we do it? How do we do that? I think we all understand what it is. We saw the scriptures that show the evilness of it. And I believe we all understand what Jesus Christ was telling us to avoid it, to be aware of it. So how can we, in practical ways, some things we can do now in our lives, practical action steps that we can take to remove the leaven of hypocrisy? So I'd like to consider three points for us to consider how we can do that. I believe first and foremost, we always have to ask God for help. Always ask God for help. And this is a given. I would think that any time we would have points on any topic, we always go back to the fact we need God's help. But let's look at this one psalm, Psalm 139. Psalm 139. Psalm 139. Psalm of David. And we know David was very deeply attached to God. He praised God. And here is a psalm. It was to be set to music. It was given to the chief musician. And we see what he is saying here. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. So he's acknowledging that God knows him, that God is not seeing a mask. He sees beyond the mask. He sees the real David. He sees us, the real person that we are. You know my sitting down and you know my rising up. You understand my thought from afar off. He knows what we're thinking. You comprehend my path. He knows where what we're doing, how we're living our lives, and my lying down. And you are acquainted with all my ways. And there is not a word on my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You know everything about me. You know where I walk. You know how I act. You know what I'm thinking. You know what I'm even speaking. So he's acknowledging that. Now notice verse 23. He says, God, search me and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. And we often look at this, you know, prior to Passover, which I'm sure many of us have done and did, but you know, this is a year-long exercise. When we ask God to say, you know everything about us, so and you know my anxieties, you know what I'm concerned about, you know what my worries are. And some of us tend to worry more than others, and just sometimes worry more. And God knows that. He knows our concerns. He knows our everything we think about. And he's saying, God, search me and see if there's any wicked in me and lead me in the way everlasting. So David's saying, since you know everything about me, I need you to help me. I need you to lead me. I need you to lead me. You know, we all have blind spots. And thankfully, a lot of the newer cars have these devices on the mirrors that tell you when a car is in your blind spot. It is God, through his Spirit, that helps us to avoid blind spots in our spiritual life. And that can include hypocrisy. Because we don't want to be one way one time and not another way another. We want to be the same way all the time. We want to be a Christian every single moment of our lives. We don't want to be an actor. We want to be absolutely honest. And so when we pray, we ask God, please, God, help me to be more like your Son. Your Son, he's our example. And should be, you know, each of our examples. Help us to be more like him. We could say, God, I don't want to be like a Pharisee. I don't want to be that way, but I need your help. I need your help. So I believe one aspect, one action step that we can take is to just ask God to help us, since he knows us, and that we can tell, we don't want to be an actor. We want to be real. We want to be genuine. When we say we are a Christian, we want to be noted as that, and ask God to help us. Okay, point number two then is to focus on humility and not pride. Now, to get into this particular point, I came across this story on the internet, and it was on a website. It's amazing how many websites are out there on stories about hypocrisy. Fascinating websites, interesting stories that are out there. And one caught my attention, and it was about this young couple that had just moved into a new neighborhood. So the next morning, while they were eating breakfast in their kitchen, the young woman looked out her window and noticed that the neighbor was hanging her wash out to dry. And she was remarking to her husband how that laundry is not really clean. I don't know about that laundry. That lady just doesn't know how to wash correctly. I don't know. Somebody needs to tell her how to wash her laundry better. Maybe she needs better soap. And this would go on. And her husband didn't say anything. He just remained silent and listened to her. So every time the neighbor would hang out her wash, the young woman repeated her observations day after day. When she would see the laundry hung out there, she just doesn't know how to clean her laundry. She's really bad at it. Well, a month later, they were in the breakfast in their kitchen, and she looked out and was surprised. She was surprised to see nice, clean wash on the line, just beautifully clean, and said to her husband, she's finally learned how to wash correctly. I wonder who taught her how to do that. She finally was able to do it. And the husband said, well, honey, I got up early this morning and washed our windows. So the problem was the woman had clean laundry all the time. It was her windows that were dirty. They were dirty. And it kind of brings up a point of what we find out here in Matthew 7, verse 3 to 5. Let's look at Matthew 7, verse 3 to 5. Matthew 7, verse 3 to 5. And again, these are the words of Jesus Christ. Why do you look at a speck in your brother's eye and you don't consider the plank in your own? How can you say to your brother, let me remove the plank from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite. That's what he called them there. Hypocrite. First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you can see it clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. The point is we always have to be leery of pride. We always have to recognize that just as yeast leavens the whole lump, pride is a puffing up of oneself, a feeling of superiority over another person. And we have to recognize we need to be humble, and we have to recognize we aren't perfect. We're trying to be, and we shouldn't be so judgmental